We come to the last session, and we are looking forward to the message which Brother August has prepared for us. He has entitled his remarks, a scriptural title from Isaiah, comfort ye, my people. Brother August.
And brethren, you know, watching the Middle East, Palestinian, Israeli problem like a hawk, and noting the latest UN voting and the one before, noting their UN censuring vote against Israel, the last one was 151 nations against and 2-4. This had prompted a letter to the comfort of the Jewish people that I wrote to a newspaper that was published on the Palestinian problem, and it was published in the Staten Island paper. And it wasn't soon after that I was asked to speak to a synagogue. I've spoken to them twice. You know, watching the entire world burdening themselves with Jerusalem, as Zechariah 12:3 says, in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone. You know, thinking of the day that it's speaking about, we might say the day of preparation we're now in, as Noah had a day of grace, so does the world. As this day, we know, is drawing to a close, Jewry's heart is really heavy, very, very heavy. And as spiritual obligations, as spiritual Israelites, we have an obligation to comfort the Jewish people. You know, at this time, I'd like you to do something maybe a little unusual. I'd like you to put yourself in a place of a natural Israelite. Spiritual to natural Israelites, just for the length of my comments. And hope that if possibly there may be one thing that the Lord has put in my heart to be a comfort to those in this synagogue, that you might be able to use as a comfort to the Jewish people as we see anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head in every respect. So, as I started speaking to the synagogue, I said, "Good morning, dear friends. It's again a privilege and an honor to stand in this synagogue." You know, I have a book called The Significant 40s. And last year, you know, we looked at the early part of last year, we thought, well, the 40th anniversary of the nation of Israel. My thoughts were, I wonder what's in store for Israel. Outside of the Palestinian problem that went all through last year, there was nothing unusual. You know, all through Israel's history, we saw 40 years of rest and peace. We saw some 40s of desolation and problems thereafter. God, through all your prophets, promised that a day would come when everything that Adam lost would someday be restored. And from what we read in our scriptures, this age is not going to be ushered in on a bed of roses. But if we know what's in store, we'll be glad and not sad. Now, this is going to take some faith on your part, you know, as natural Israelites, just for a moment. And this brings us up to the problems of today. And to bring us up to the problems of today, we have to go back. You know, in your scriptures, an outsider was called an alien, or an outsider was called a stranger. Isaiah said that someday strangers would build up thy walls and also said, even them will I bring to my holy mountain. How about a house of prayer for all nations? And Zechariah saying that 10 men taking hold of the skirt of him who was a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Now, we know this is going to take a miracle. And we know it. And you know it. Isaiah also told someone to comfort ye my people. Comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received the Lord's hand double for all her sins. I just want you to remember this word, double. In 1 Kings 8:41, your King Solomon's prayer, the dedication of the temple to God, was quoted to me in a letter from David Ben-Gurion. Let me just read what he said. Dear friends, I've read your letter with deep interest. When our King Solomon finished building the temple, he prayed to God. The stranger that is not of thy people Israel, when he shall come out of a far country for thy name's sake, hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place, and do according to all the stranger calleth to thee for, that all the people of the earth may know thy name, to hear thee as doth thy people Israel. So an Israeli will certainly be glad to meet you and see the model of the temple. Because we were at that time building a model of Ezekiel's temple that we worked on for 20 years. But thinking of Ben-Gurion having the faith, because his Solomon said, they listened to a stranger. He just might be something there. And he had the faith to say he'd be happy to meet with a stranger, a Gentile. So, I can only think of his great faith, Ben-Gurion's great faith, in what your prophet said. Even his wife Paula had tears. We showed them many, many slides, spent 3 hours in Ben-Gurion's home, and we had a blessed time being there and talking with Ben-Gurion. But, you know, up till now, there have been very few with a comforting message to Israel. But I'm going to tell you of one. And for that, we have to go back to a founder of the Bible students, whose sermons were read by 1,500,000 a week, published in almost every city in the United States, and almost every prominent newspaper. You know, he loved the Hebrew people, and they came to know it. They watched and read his pro Israel articles for about 35 years. And starting about 1875, and of course the stranger's name was Pastor Russell, in 1910, a committee representing noted rabbis, editors, and teachers finally asked Pastor Russell to speak to them. On October 10th, 1910, he addressed 4,000 enthusiastic Hebrews at the Hippodrome. It's just at home, I have a pile of old newspapers going way back to Allegheny and so on and so on. I have, this is of course a copy, I wouldn't be handling a newspaper from 1910, but this is a page from the New York American, October 10th, 1910. Pastor Russell cheered by an audience of Hebrews. 4,000 in Hippodrome applauded when a venerable Brooklyn clergyman advocates establishment of a Jewish nation. Hearers who came to question Gentiles' view on their religion find he agrees in their most important beliefs. Preacher, after hailing them as one of the bravest races on earth, says the kingdom may return to them in 1914. The The printing is a little on a fine side. I just read a few things here. The unusual spectacle of 4,000 Hebrews enthusiastically applauding a Gentile preacher after having listened to a sermon he addressed to them concerning their own religion was presented at the Hippodrome yesterday afternoon, where Pastor Russell, the famous head of the Brooklyn Tabernacle, conducted a most unusual service. In his time, the venerable pastor has done many unconventional things. His religion is founded by no particular denomination and encompasses, as he says, all mankind. His way of teaching are his own, but he never did a more unconventional thing than this, nor a more successful one. He won over an audience that had come, some of it at least, prepared to debate with him, to resent perhaps what might appear like a possible intrusion. Pastor Russell is going to try to convert the Jews to Christianity, was the word that many received before the meeting. He wants to proselytize us, and so on. And of course, you know, you probably all have read what he said, but some of the things that he said, you can picture yourself as a Jewish audience, never having heard this before. It is not my thought that the 8 million of Jews in the world will all go to Palestine, even though it has been estimated that under most favorable conditions, the land could support more than twice that many. It is my thought that some of your more earnest and saintly people will go to Palestine quickly, that the rejuvenation there will be astonishing to the world. Further, it is my thought that Jews in every part of the world, in proportion as they come under the holy influence of God's promises through the prophets, will go to Palestine sympathetically by encouraging those who can better go than themselves, and by financially assistance and the establishment of great enterprises. Permit me to suggest that in a time of trouble, incidental to the transfer of Gentile rule to the power of Messiah, all financial interests will be jeopardized. Many of your race, growing wealthy, will surely take pleasure in forwarding the work of Zionism as soon as they shall realize that it is of God, foretold through your prophets. And those of you, of insufficient faith to use their means in forwarding the Lord's work it's very difficult to read, at this important juncture will, before very long, find themselves in a condition pictured by the prophet Ezekiel, who declares that this great day of trouble, and in this day they shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed, and their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. The great messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in, Malachi, will test and prove you as a people. Those who worship idols of gold and silver, stocks and bonds, will receive severe chastisement at the hand, that they may learn a great lesson before he will grant them a share in a coming blessing. And a lot more. Now, you asked me to come this morning because of the article I published on the Palestinian roots. I'm only here as a student of the one and only God, true God's word, your God and mine, the great and mighty. As Daniel stood before Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and Joseph before Pharaoh, claiming no wisdom on their own, so I also want to give all credit to God in helping me to bring you this message. As we look at a copy of the Declaration of the Establishment of the Little State of Israel, you know, on two sides we see God revealing to Ezekiel the Declaration of the Establishment of the State of Israel, Tel Aviv, May 14th, 1948. We see here they show dry bones, knowing that their nation were likened to the dry bones that Ezekiel foretold. God revealing to Ezekiel the meaning of the vision of the dry bowls and how in stages we know they came together and that they did not have the fullness of light until finally God's breath or God's spirit was put into them. Now Pastor Russell also addressed a packed house of Jewish people at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. 2,000 Jews were turned away. And they put 300 extra seats on the stage platform to try to accommodate many others. And he told them, as we read, in 1910, as he said earlier, that something was going to happen in 1914 that would affect them. I'm going to try to endeavor to show, to link, the hidden clues in your scriptures with our day. And we might call it a hidden mystery revealed. You know, the prophet Daniel wrote, Daniel 12:4, "But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the end of to the time of the end, knowledge shall be increased." And verse 9, he said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed up till the time of the end." You know, we think of Jacob on his deathbed, calling his sons. This is way back in Genesis, and he's telling him, "I'm going to tell you what will befall you at the end of days." There are many other scriptures showing that the restoration of Israel, the increase of knowledge, worldwide sodomy, great time of trouble, and so on, would be seen by one generation. I didn't tell them where that was found, but we all know what that generation is. It's ours. So what we're going to do is try to put some clues together that may help you realize the truth of what your prophets have said. Before I mention that, let's just say that I've found that many in Jewry have lost faith in the inspiration of the sacred scriptures and as the Word of God. And you know, possibly this modern generation, this time that we're in, should not be unduly blamed for the skepticism. When we see the flood of literature, of criticism in the sacred writings, but you know, if we earnestly study the law and study the prophets, apart from the theories of men, we're going to come to realize that without a doubt, that our great God is orderly in his dealings in behalf of humanity and most definite in shaping the destiny of his people Israel. Your prophet David said in the 102nd Psalm, let's say our prophet, we love him too, "Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favor her, yea, the set time is come. For thy servants take pleasure in her stones and favor the dust thereof. Then shall the Gentiles fear," or we might say reverence, "the name of Jehovah. And all the kings of the earth thy glory, when the Lord builds up Zion. He shall appear in his glory." Remember this. When the Lord shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. Psalms of David, 102:13-18. Note what God said, a set time. We think of Israel's hopes. Why so long delayed? Do you know God referred to it as a hidden mystery? To Abram he said, "Thy seed shall be as the stars of heaven and as the sands of the seashore." And after God said to Abraham, you know, "Look north and look south and look east and look west, you know, all this land I will give you." What did Abraham say? "Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit this?" And recall God saying, "I'm going to take a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old she-goat, a 3-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon." totaling a total age of 11 years. So if you were to take this as 11 prophetic years, or 360 literal years each, it would give us 3,960 years. The time from the giving of the covenant to 1915. You know, we say, wow, way out, you know, far-fetched. Just wait until we put all these clues together before you judge. Recall God said to Moses, I'll chastise you 7 times. The long period of Jewish affliction has been foretold long before Babylon, the Babylonian captivity, and Zedekiah's overthrow. And of course, you know, you realize in Leviticus 26, the Lord spoke to Israel through Moses saying, if ye will not, for all this, all the wonderful things I've done, if for all this you will not hearken to me, then I will walk contrary to you. And in fury, even I will chastise you 7 times. It's interesting that this 7 times of punishment was repeated 4 times. 4 times he repeated it in the same chapter. Also alluded to elsewhere, God said to Ezekiel in 4 through 6, I have appointed thee each day for a year. In computing symbolic time, in ancient time, they divided the year into 12 months, or 30 days each, or 360 days, and this was called a time. So 7 times would be 7 times 360, or 2,520 years. So this depicted the period of the Gentile lease of power over Zion. Let's just check that out. The last Jewish king taken captive about 606 B.C., 7 times or 2,520, brings us to 1914, World War I, ousting of the Turks from Israel. The long lease of power to the Gentiles is now up. So what do we see? We see the sort of dispossession, beginning of the dispossession of the old tenant, and the repossession by the rightful owner now was underway. Next clue, now they're in Babylon. God writes on a wall, Belshazzar's feast. Belshazzar's knees were knocking together, fearful of this hand that scribed these Babylonish units of measure in the wall. What did God write? You know, many, take up farthen. Daniel told them it signified they were weighed in the balances and found wanting, and they sure were. But God wrote in Chaldaic units, a measure, a Chaldaic units of measure. He wrote a mina, a shekel, and a divided mina, or a half mina. Let's see, a mina is 50 shekels, a shekel is 20 gerahs, added up again. God there wrote, would be 2,520 gerahs, the same number given to Moses. A coincidence? No way. 2,520, a very unusual number in itself. It's the only number that can be evenly divided by each of our 10 digits. What happened in 1914 beside the start of World War I? A few months after the war began, Britain found herself running short on a mineral used in the manufacture of high explosives. Germany was making great use of high explosives, using her torpedo boats to great advantage. Britain's lack of this important mineral used in making high explosives put her in a very embarrassing position, to say the least. Do you know that certain defeat was looming very large? Certain defeat. Great Britain was like at her end. Just at this critical time, a Russian Jew by the name of Dr. Chaim Weizmann, who lived in England for 25 years, he came forward with a proposition. He was a student of chemistry, and he had discovered a substitute for the needed mineral, but having no use for it, he laid this secret aside. This was a secret, only known to him. He developed it, but he laid this secret aside. He offered the use of his discovery to the British government, but when asked the price, he replied that he did not want money, but a promise. He said that if Great Britain would use her power and influence to free Palestine from the oppressor and secure it for a Jewish home, he would allow her the use of his discovery. Britain readily gave the promise and was thus sold to Israel. Great Britain was mortgaged to Israel as a trustee of her interests in Palestine. So this was in keeping with the promise made to Hein Weizmann when the war was over, during which Palestine had been freed from the Turks. Came forward later on with his three demands of the peace conference, which was to make, one was to make Britain a trustee of Palestine. After this 1910 Past Russell Hippodrome address, Pastor was asked to speak to millions of Hebrews all over the states, the United States, and Europe. And after 1914, he told them that the Gentile lease of power was up. He says, the land is yours. He says, go for it. These are just a few of some of the prophetic clues that show that we are at an end of an old order, and a new order of things is now gradually being ushered in. A new day for Israel and for mankind, and that Israel has long suffered injustices. She's no desire, there's one interesting thing, she has no desire to visit injustices upon others that live in her land. How about Nebuchadnezzar's vision of the great image depicting the four universal empires as told by Daniel? Pastor Russell elaborated on this. To the Jewish group, I went through it briefly. And that in the days of this, the feet of this image would God of heaven set up a system, a new order. Thinking of Jeremiah, how I recorded, spoke about this double or Mishnah that we heard mentioned the other day, yesterday. Duplicate of second portion, the death of Jacob to the rejection and desolation of Israel, 1845 years of favor, and the same period of double, 1845 years, then brought us to 1914 also. Coming down to our era now, down to Israel's problems in 1989 and 88. We still have to go back a bit. You know, many Jewish commentators recognize that Israel's subjection to the Gentiles' power was a period of chastening and disfavor. Hosea 3, 4, and 5 is quoted as proof. For the children of Israel shall sit solitary many days without a king, without prince, without sacrifice, without pillar, without ephod or teraphim. Afterward shall the children of Israel return, seek the Lord their God and David their king, and shall come trembling unto the Lord and to his goodness in the end of days. You know, seeing the children of Israel returning, is it not good reason to believe that we, you, as the nation of Israel, are nigh on to the time that God referred to as the end of an age? You know, the Berlin Congress of Nations gave the Zionists the first genuine opportunity to go about with just a little sparkle in their eyes. It made possible land purchase in their homeland. And of course, this signal sort of awakened Jewish minds to the divine providence working on behalf of God's people. One of those great men of vision, of course, that came forward at that time was Theodor Herzl. You know, it's interesting. I tried to find it in Herzl. This is a little ad-libbing, you know, in the Herzl Institute. But there was a commemorative stamp, past Russell's picture on one side and Herzl on the other side. Brother Norby had it. Anyone knows, anyone who's got it, boy, I'd love to get a copy of it. There's a commemorative stamp going way back. So, in 1896, Herzl presented a booklet entitled The Jewish State. And now he appealed to rich Jews to call a Congress of Jews and begin laying the ground for Zionist activities. The book was a success, but it was an unexpected success in the wrong quarter. He thought the rich Jews would spearhead the movement. He was wrong. It was only the poor and oppressed Jews. All over Europe and Russia arose to the appeal, and Zionism came to bloom. Now, Herzl lighted the Zionist torch and carried it high and magnificently. Pastor Russell mentioned his name many, many times. But it remained for Weizmann to plant the torch in Palestine and gain the international recognition of the rights of the Jewish people to their former homeland. Chaim Weizmann, by the providence of God, secured for his people the Balfour Declaration, as we just read. And it was a promise of a general international recognition of the historic rights of the Jewish people in Palestine, a recognition to be realized in a few years later in the decision of the League of Nations. Now, David Ben-Gurion, this is very interesting. David Ben-Gurion was aware of one important fact overlooked by Jewry. In an article on the Balfour Declaration, Ben-Gurion wrote in Der Yiddish Kämpfer, November 14th, he says, after the entire country, from Dan to Beersheba, is conquered by the British, it will not be ours, even with their consent. It'll not be ours. And even if all the nations of the world agree to it, he says, no people can establish title to a land except through its own toil, its own creative effort and settlement. This is David Ben-Gurion. Continue. Ben-Gurion's quote. England has done a great thing. It has recognized our existence as a political entity and acknowledged our right to the land. But the Hebrew people themselves must transform it into a living fact. Through its own efforts of body, soul, and material assets, it must set up its national home and complete its national redemption. The American Zionists did not receive Ben-Gurion's words very favorably. To many in Jewry, the Balfour Declaration, that was the end of the matter. It was eternal. Whenever any Hebrew felt disposed to go back to the land or do whatever he wanted with it, it was there. It was an ironclad guarantee. But Ben-Gurion warned them. The British were the first to observe that the Jewish people were not in any hurry to return. Arye Pinkus, chairman of the Jewish Agency, executive observed, between 1917 and the Churchill White Paper of 1922, severing Transjordan from the Jewish national home, there was abundant room for fast and widespread colonization. But Aliyah came in trickles. The Jews came in little trickles. And the small number spread out over the years could not prevent a consolidation of the Arab complicity. This failure made it very easy for Great Britain to highlight the fact that Transjordan, or Jordan, was not essential for Jewish aspirations. New York Times, October 3rd, 1975. It called Jordan's capital the greatest Palestinian city in the world. 1940, Hussein's grandfather wanted to call his country the Kingdom of Palestine. 1970, Hussein's brother said, Palestine is Jordan. Jordan is Palestine. 1970, Yasser Arafat. Jordan is Palestine. The World Atlas, World Almanac, tells you exactly the same. Do you realize that Jordan was 77% of the original mandate? Because Israel showed no interest in it. The British gave it away. 77%. This is only one root of today's Palestinian problem. You know, it was the plight of the Jews in Russia that touched Britain's heart and brought about the Balfour Declaration, November 2nd, 1917. You know what happened 5 days later? The Bolshevik Revolution. Steal the Jewish people in Russia until this time. Say, until this time? See the headlines last week? Jerusalem Post, well, 2 weeks ago. This is a couple weeks ago. April 8th. Massive exodus of Soviet Jews predicted. Bush pushing to okay 150 visas for 150 Soviets. Jewish Soviets. And my thoughts were, they may have to wait just a little bit longer, but there are some things brewing until the Lord really fulfills his promise to bring them from the land of the north. You know, through the Balfour Declaration, God said, take, the land is yours. Now we just saw how few were interested. So, the fishing that Jeremiah spoke of, come back. Pinska, Herzl, come back, fishing, Rothschild, Watchman, Ben Gurion. It didn't work. Why did God, God knew the fishing was going to work, why would he say, after that I'm going to send the hunters? You know, just getting off the track a bit. Didn't say this to you, but many Jewish people that you've witnessed to, they'll cry the blues about the Holocaust, but you tell them what God has done and why. And many Jews have said to me, do you know, Mr. Tonquist, how often I've asked that question of my rabbi? And I get the answer from a Christian? Why the Holocaust? It took the hunters of Poland, Romania, Germany to wake them out of the diaspora slumber. When Herzl's word went out, the belly was full, the pockets were jingling. The rich didn't want to go back to that God-forsaken land. Only a few of the poor, those that were really laying on their back and looking up, went back to Israel. So, our day of turmoil that we see in the world today is just coincident with the termination of the Gentile lease of power. As we all know, great financial upheavals are due. As Pastor Russell said, it's coming. And those of Israel who have the means and hold back support for this little nation of Israel, as was said, may sooner than they think, be losing their gold and their silver. As Ezekiel said, it won't deliver them in that day. Thinking of God's covenant, you know, to Abraham, that he would bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. Look at Britain since the White Paper. Lost every single colony. The Yom Kippur War. Refused to let the U.S. aircraft refuel during the airlift to Israel. A British stock crash 2 months later. The worst in 50 years of Great Britain's history. A coal strike. And so on. Prior to 1973, Israel had diplomatic relations with 70 nations. By 1974, Yom Kippur War, nearly all Europe and all of Black Africa broke off relations. How's Africa doing? I'll curse the nations that curse thee. How are the Arabs doing? We could ask the same question of all the 50 nations that are at war right now. We could talk an hour alone just on this subject. I'll curse them that curse thee. As I said before, you know that every one of your prophets told of a time of restitution and restoration of all things. The whole theme is, the Bible is a divine plan of the ages. And if you have the faith to believe it, you will rejoice as we are rejoicing. God says in Malachi 3, 1 through 3, that he would test and prove all Israel as a people chosen of God. It's a possibility that this period of grace that we're in is could come to an end sooner than we think. In our day, you know, these angry and fearful nations of the old autocratic order gather themselves together. And we see, like you saw on the front page of the U.S. News and World Report just about 4 or 5 weeks ago, they were likening Lebanon to the seething pots of uncontrolled anarchy in our cities, rising up to destroy. The Bible foretells these problems, but final restoration. In a present buildup of events in the Middle East, together with the nature and location of Israel's main sworn enemy, Russia, Ezekiel 38 and 39, and the plotting of the councils of the nations for the downfall of Israel, as we see in the voting, and it seems as they talk about peace. 50 nations at war, but the peace they talk about is really the Palestinian problem in Israel. They're burdening, everyone's burdening themselves with Jerusalem. So all the plotting the accounts for the plotting for the downfall of the nation of Israel, all the nations around, and this points forcefully to a final confrontation. God calls it the time of Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah 30, Zechariah 12 and 14. Now, lest you be downhearted, I'm going to give you a little sneak preview of the last chapter. God says, Israel shall be saved. God has promised that he will save Israel in the hour of her greatest distress. He will break the nations that come against her in that day. And I told them, don't be surprised to see the whole world turning against your little nation. God says, I'll make your little nation a burdensome stone for all people. But he says, all that burden themselves with it shall be sore wounded. And all the nations of the earth be gathered against it. Can you see the handwriting on a wall, so to speak? Not only Zechariah, but how about Jeremiah? Jeremiah 30:13. There is none to plead thy cause, that thou mayest be bound up. Thou hast no healing medicines. All the nations are against thee. All thy lovers have forgotten thee. They seek thee not. 16. Therefore all they that devour thee shall be devoured. This is the good news. And all thine adversaries, every one of them, shall go into captivity. And they that spoil thee shall be a spoil. And all that pray thee will I give for a prey. For I will restore health unto thee, and I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith the Lord, because they called thee an outcast, saying, this is Zion, whom no man seeketh after. So Israel is yet oppressed. Few are seeking after her. That wild ass of a man, Ishmael, God, we know, is allowing yet to rant and rave and be as stubborn as a wild ass, as the Masoretic says. The prophets tell of worldwide breakdown of law and order. Daniel spoke of it as a time of trouble, such as there never was since there was a nation. And at that time shall thy people be delivered. Earth and its high symbolic mountains, representing autocratic governments, are going to be shaken by revolutions. We can see we've got 50 nations at war right now, and ultimately be carried into the sea. The systems go down a drain, in other words. Lost utterly in anarchy. Not the people, but the governments. You know, where violence is concerned, neither Israel or any other nation is above scrutiny. But the consistency of the outcry against Israel by the international community, including the United States, is suspect. Think of this. When Syria occupied the Golan Heights between 1948 and 67, Syrian guns continually shelled Israeli settlements in a valley below. While the world powers looked on, I see no evil. I see no outcry at all. Similarly, when the Arab Legion defied the UN and seized Holy Jerusalem in 1948, Jerusalem desecrated Jewish holy sites. I showed you in that picture Zechariah's tomb and the entire Mount of Olives. Thousands and thousands of tombs desecrated. They used those tombstones for pathways and slabs inside their bathrooms. I saw it. I have pictures of it. And they banned Jews from the city. Once again, the world remained silent. 1970, Jordan massacred 20,000 refugees when it kicked out the PLO. 20,000 are massacred. In 1982, Syria destroyed the Muslim Brotherhood stronghold in the city of Hama. 19,000 were slaughtered. Television cameras were not permitted to report the details, nor was there a cry of outrage by the international community about either carnage. 1985-87, the Allied forces waged total war against the PLO camps in Lebanon. The world viewed the limited TV reports with indifference, but now cry with outrage at Israel's handling of the refugee unrest, in which few, by comparison, have been killed. Iraq killed 5,000 Kurds in 10 minutes. Only one report about this size. Today, not so much right now, but last year, they had one TV camera covering every five Israeli soldiers. When Israel secured Judea, Samaria, the West Bank, and Gaza in 1967, she inherited the Palestinian refugee camps that were established by the Jordanian and Egypt and are currently administered by the United Nations Agency. Israel wanted to negotiate both refugee problem and a peace settlement, but the Arabs refused, leaving the Israelis stuck with those refugee camps. Became a unique part of the Arab ploy. World headlines are captured by orchestrating violence in the camps, which invokes world sympathy for a Palestinian state. This is all part of God's plan. Not telling this to the Jewish people, but part of the Lord's great army that's going to tear the system down. But remember, it's because of the Arab nation's refusal to negotiate the refugee problem both in 1948 and 67 that violence is erupting on the West Bank and Gaza beginning in 1988. The Shahab, the young people, have taken to the streets, spoiling for trouble. They're a new generation. And you know why? They're spawned in the refugee camps. From the earliest childhood, they have been taught lies of hate. They vehemently believe their Palestinian rootage reaches back for centuries and that Jews are intruders who have uprooted them. Breeders of hate have suckled this new generation on the lies of hate, and we now witness this hate generation revolting in violence. You might use a headline, the big lie technique. A big lie technique resurfaces. The Jewish Horizon introduced this article with the following words. Once again, we are witnessing a resurgence of the big lie technique. It's simple. If you repeat a lie often enough, omit the facts, speak half-truths, ignore historical past, and then create new facts, which never were facts, the world will believe what the deceiver wants you to believe. We resent a breed of sensationalists on TV, the radio, and news media who are neither concerned with the facts, historical perspective, nor truth. Instead, these special types of opportunities feed on creating illusions and ignore historical facts and truths as it pertains to Israel. Although the media has dealt in length with Israel and Gaza, few of the experts have taken the time to learn the facts, examine history, or report accurately. You know, some feel that, well, if Israel does have to give back a token part of the West Bank, we shouldn't be concerned. She'll soon have it back, plus the East Bank, Jordan, and more. Scripture tells us that before long, possibly before the war to end all wars, Jacob's trouble, millions more Hebrews will flock back because of world unrest. The Jews, the Russians, with their political, financial problems, would never have given thought to this before, but now they'd like to get rid of some Jews. God says he's going to use Jacob's trouble to reveal himself to the nations. You know, I often open, not my small Bible, but big Bible, to Ezekiel 38 and 39. And right on those two pages, I got underlined all the scriptures. You know what I call it? I call it God's Getting to Know Me campaign. I will do this. The Gentiles will know. The heathen shall know. Israel shall know. The world of mankind are going to know. From that day forward, they're going to know. God's Getting to Know Me campaign. That's what I call it. Open those two pages. That's what I call it. And Israel is the world's hourglass. Israel is the world's time clock. The Gentile lease of power over Israel has run out. The time has expired. Israel is here for good. You know, there's only one place on earth ever promised to anyone, anyone, for an everlasting possession. God bless you. As God said, Pastor Russell said, to us, you're the bravest people on earth. God has blessed.
Thank you, Brother August. I know I have always enjoyed those prophecies about Israel. I know we all do. It's not just my personal joy. As I heard him referring to those scriptures, I brought back memories of something that was had a very, very big impact on my awareness of the role of Israel in God's plan very early in my, if I may say, career with the Bible Student Fellowship, and that was seeing the production of the Third Temple. I don't know how many of you have seen that, but impressive. And it put all those prophecies together, and of course August was one of the principals in that, and ever since then I saw it in Grand Rapids, Michigan years ago. It was a big crowd, and my mother came and she enjoyed it very much too, and that's been so impressive and had an impact on my understanding, and I appreciate that and the commitment and interest that Brother August has had in that area. So thank you very, very much. And not only was this a message to bring back and recall these prophecies, but because of the way in which you approached it, it's kind of like a continuation of our workshop this morning on witnessing techniques. He just showed us another example of a technique on witnessing. So we're very appreciative, Brother August, for your service here. And Brother August will close our convention with prayer. And since that will be the end, let me just reiterate what we've already said, how thankful we are and blessed we have been that you have come here and joined with us and with each other in convention. Thank you all, and especially those who served.
Loving Father and gracious God, we humbly bow before thee to give thee thanks for thy precious dear Son. We thank thee for thy Holy Spirit that has radiated through all the speakers at this convention. We ask, Lord, that to help us to retain all the blessed thoughts that we've heard. We want to thank you for this little class here in Omaha, all their hard work, and bless them for what they have done. We also ask that you be with all those who are already traveling, be with us as we travel to our homes, and we might retain the things we have heard, and that we might even convert them into witness activities, convert world problems and experiences into witness activities, and let others see Jesus in us. We love you.